Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Lyle. And we're without Wayne.
Yeah. So we're going to make sure to talk about all the things that he really likes just to annoy him.
Yeah, for sure. It also might be a quick episode because I'm sick. So my voice might give out, or my interest might give out, because this is actually going to be the conversation we had last week that Wayne did not record, or at least his end.
Yeah. So sorry about missing an episode, everybody.
Yeah. So despite Wayne, let's talk about Game of Thrones and Netrunner.
Yay!
Actually, it's big news in general for living card games at Fantasy Flight. Actually, two pieces of news. One is there's going to be a second edition of Game of Thrones come August of next year. So they're... Well, what you would do in a second edition, rebooting it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
The other news is they're going to switch to a rotation system where cards will rotate out or be phased out.
Yeah, rotation doesn't really sound like the best word because it's not like they're going to be rotated back in at some point. It's just an expiration system, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think their version is going to, and this is going to apply to all of the card games,
mm-hmm.
Star Wars, Netrunner, Game of Thrones, and... I think the same system is going to apply to all of them in that when the eighth set or cycle comes out, then the first two in that set will phase out or be phased out.
Hmm. So now that that's happened, is there any difference between living card games and collectible card games?
There's still the mystery in the packs of collectible card games.
Oh, okay.
Whereas living card games will still have the idea that you will know exactly what you get with every... data pack or for Netrunner or chapter pack for Game of Thrones.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Well, that's still a pretty big difference, I suppose.
Yeah. For me, the thing I found most annoying about Magic was actually that system.
Hmm.
And not so much that I didn't know what was going to be in the packs that I bought.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned when we were talking about it earlier is that you like that excitement that you don't know what you're going to get in the pack. And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And very disappointing when you don't get anything.
More often disappointing than fun, yes. But then I like the idea of trying to build a good hand out of what you got, kind of by luck of the draw. But, you know, actually, I mentioned that to Wayne, and he pointed out a good point, you know, that it's not really up to luck of the draw. People who have more money to buy more packs are still going to get better cards than you. So, yeah.
I mean, Magic's pretty popular, and there's a big secondary market, so it's easy to get your hands on singles. So... that wasn't a problem, but it just was all those cards that you can't use anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them, I mean, they say you can keep them because they might cycle back in to, you know, they might be legal. They might turn up in another set or turn up in the core set. But for the most part, you're looking at dead cards that you didn't want to cart around for years.
Exactly. I know that it's kind of in the nature of card games that you have to produce new cards. So there's inexorably going to be an amount of creep in it. But I don't know, it's hard to... give an excuse for this as anything other than to sell more cards.
And that's fine, more power to them. I think one of the justifications is they've just reached a point in Game of Thrones where it's very hard to keep track of the cards. There's a huge entry cost for new players because they, you know, look at all of the packs that have been out before and, you know, should I? And I admit, when I started playing Game of Thrones, that was something that gave me pause. Well, just in our little group, I think most people are excited.
Mm-hmm.
We're all kind of late to the game, so the game's been around for years. And everybody that I know has joined or started playing the game about a year ago. So everybody's like, oh man, it sucks for us as far as timing goes. But people seem to be pretty excited and just are committed to playing the first edition for another year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
before
nice.
Before switching over, yeah.
That's cool.
Wow, they're committed now, and then once second edition comes out...
that'll all be gone.
Well, I'll just get it just to look at it, you know, just see the changes.
Just a taste.
They're already saying that. At first it was, yeah, no, I'm going to stick to the cards I had, and I was like, well, what? I do like what I'm hearing about the second edition, so I'll get the core set, see what it's like, you know, first taste is free.
Yeah,
so that was the big new gaming news in our group, except the other news is... for me, is my copy of Emergence is shipping over.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and that was our first interview that we did on the podcast.
Yeah.
So for those people that don't remember or didn't listen to it, Emergence is like a science fiction fantasy game.
Mm-hmm.
that has Earthlings, or at least descendants of Earthlings, but it's set on another world. And they went through a portal, and then they got trapped on this world.
Yes. So it's like high technology, but yet with magic and kind of all the fantasy races, and orcs and goblins and elves and dwarves and things like that, all set up in a system. And I think it was episode 91 from us. That was the interview that we did with the creators.
You looked that up. You looked that up.
Of course I did. And it was October 26, 2012, so almost exactly 2 years ago. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But yeah. That's awesome, you know, that to see that this is coming to fruition.
Yeah, I think one of the selling points of the system was that you didn't stop at half-breeds.
Mm-hmm.
You could have quarter-breeds or octa-breeds. I don't know what they're called. Can I say breeds now? If I'm talking about a game, that's fine, eh?
You know, I'm the last person to ask about PC things.
Yeah.
This is kind of, well, it's only a little taste of news. There's now playtesting going on for a Fate version of Eclipse Phase. And Eclipse Phase, if anybody remembers, we did a campaign confessions about it quite a while ago. That was episode 54. That one was in memory, too. But it's a kind of a transhuman game that's set up in the future where it's all super-duper high-tech with nanotechnology and internet everywhere. And I really, really love the genre, and the game itself was really exciting. But
I think people may have heard us mention it frequently whenever we talk about new players and say, don't play this game.
Yeah, actually, no, you got a point.
Not for new players, this game is.
Yeah, it's pretty far out there. But one of the problems with it that makes it not so good for new players is that the rules are extremely complex. There's lots of numbers and little dials and values that you can go all over the place. I mean, I set up an Excel sheet to make a character. I've mentioned this before, of course. But I couldn't actually imagine doing a character by hand. It'd be far too much work. But one of the things that is exciting about this is because Fate is a relatively speaking simple game. So it's something that's really exciting as far as a different way to play in a setting that I really enjoy. But also with a system that I like a lot because I'm a big fan of Fate. So, yeah. I haven't actually read the rules yet, so I can't say whether it is good or not. But just the prospect is very exciting.
Yeah, that certainly might make Eclipse Phase a bit easier for newer players to handle.
Yeah.
But the concepts were pretty out there as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Certainly something we talked about a lot in that episode was how to play transhuman and how to really divorce yourself from the concept of humanity or how much you should divorce yourself from that.
Yeah.
And that it was very different than playing an elf or playing a dwarf or...
Like yeah,
that just doesn't compare. So
it's true because it's almost impossible to imagine just the amount of ability and thought process and memories that they would have access to, instantaneous access to basically all of the sum knowledge of humanity at any given moment. And I think they also had like artificial AIs that live in your head as well, so they encourage playing multiple characters at once. So it's out there. But if anyone's interested in looking into that, you can go to the Eclipse Phase website. Sorry, I don't have the URL handy, but just do a web search for it. And in their forums, there's a topic there on the Fate conversion.
Yep. Oh, we'll provide a link in the show notes.
Definitely.
Yeah. I was reading this article online about the Marvel movies and the announcement, like where they projected like to 2018 or 20 or whatever.
Mm, yeah, I saw that.
And how it was a mistake to do that.
Really?
Yeah, well, the argument is that they don't know what's going to be popular or what's going to hit with people.
Ah, I see.
And they've also taken away a lot of the surprise. Well, connection to the card games. They've taken away some of the mystery, so they can't... So the question is whether or not they would be able to generate a lot of hype with teasers and that, because people already know what the next movie will be.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Now, there's also this kind of not really anticipating a lot of the problems that can go wrong. You know, contract negotiations, sales, just things going out of fashion and so never getting made.
I was watching this. I watched this interview with Stephen Amell. I think that's how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. The guy that plays Green Arrow on the show Arrow. So he was talking about how the TV series evolves as the seasons progress.
Mm-hmm.
Like actually in the midst of the season, because they don't know what characters are going to be popular.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the actresses who plays sidekick. She wasn't going to be a very big role,
mm-hmm.
but the fans liked her a lot, so she gained more prominence just because of that fan reaction. So I wonder if Marvel's going to make the adjustments if a certain character really hits or connects with the audience, like let's say Quicksilver.
Mm-hmm.
But are they going to be able to insert a Quicksilver movie?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, if other characters are bomb, then they have a movie planned, like
then it's a remake.
They're gonna go ahead with that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, it kind of makes sense because I'm sure that they're already planning ahead that far. Because a full feature-length movie takes something like 6 years to produce from the initial beginnings all the way until it hits the theaters. So, you know, it's 2004, almost 2015 now, so getting that far ahead isn't really that big a surprise. But it's like you said, though, they're locking themselves in there. They're not really enabling themselves to make changes with this, so.
Yeah, I wonder if the superhero craze is going to bust.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's booming, but...
Yeah, I certainly hope not. I quite enjoy the movies, but yeah, who knows?
So this episode's going to be another Game Master Corner, and for those people not familiar with that series, it's for newish Game Masters. So if you're a more experienced Game Master, some of the tips we provide might be old hat for you, but hopefully you get something out of the episode. And for newish Game Masters, please have a listen and learn from our mistakes, I guess.
So true.
Yeah. So we talked about the first session in a previous GM corner,
mm-hmm.
And how to prepare for that. But there's and since we're talking about movies and, you know, the pre-production, the actual filming, and then also really important is the post-production. And it's the same thing with games. I mean, you prepare, you actually play it, but also the post-session is a very important part of a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we've divided this episode into two parts. One is... in the post-session, conversations to have with your players, and the second part is conversations to have with yourself, which probably doesn't sound that good, but it makes sense.
Those are the majority of my conversations.
You do not need to have these conversations with yourself aloud. You can have them in your head.
Yeah. So if that helps, you know, hey, yeah. Who are we to judge?
So what kind of conversations would you have with your players, you ask? These are you're essentially asking them how the game went and getting that started. And it's really important because how the game went, and then that's going to help you in your planning for the future sessions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one piece of advice we just want to drop in here is that these conversations are best had as actual conversations, like talking to each other, as opposed to something over email or like on a messaging program or something like that. It's best to actually speak to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the reasons is because people are lazy.
Yes.
Yeah, and they might have the best intentions. So if you say, well, how did the game go? Can you just mail me or send me a message online or whatever?
Yeah, assuming they do get to it, they'll say, oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and people do that. I mean, even though we carry our phones around, there's, you know, how many times do I sit there and go, yeah, I'll email. Maybe when I get home, I still got to, like... check Facebook or read this article on the Lions or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And another thing is the immediacy. So it'll be fresh in the people's minds. So if something was really, really good and they say it right away, you can be reasonably certain that they actually thought it was really, really good because they're able to give you an answer quickly.
Mm-hmm.
If it was bad and they give you a quick answer, I mean, that's the reaction. That's how they feel.
That's exactly
They walk away. They might say, well, it wasn't that bad. You know, maybe it'll get better, but I can't say that. It'll be too rude. Yeah, mm-hmm. So they'll second guess themselves and perhaps soften it.
Yeah.
So you might not get the most honest feedback.
Yeah. Oh, and just in case it's not entirely clear as well, we're recommending having this conversation like right after the session is over too, when everything is still fresh in the players' minds.
Yeah, absolutely. Like budget a little bit of time at the end of the evening and to just ask the players and start these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to start is actually for you to start by critiquing yourself and giving your thoughts on what you would like to do better or how you thought the session went.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason behind that is if the players see that you're open to criticism, then they'll be more likely to give honest feedback. And this also gives you the opportunity to own up or to admit like you made a bad call on something or mm-hmm. If it's your first time running a game, then the rules didn't go that smoothly.
Right. Well, that's actually something that I kind of prefer to hold back on a little bit because I want to hear criticisms from the players first about what they thought I might have made mistakes with. And sometimes, you know, being completely honest, it's if they didn't notice that I made a mistake, I don't want them to know.
Well, I can see that. I mean, you don't want to feel that you're leading the players.
Mm-hmm.
I guess where the criticism idea comes from, the idea that they might be hesitant or inhibited.
Oh, no, no, like, I completely agree that that's a good way to start. Just, I don't want to necessarily, like, own up to any big rules errors that I made or anything like that in hopes that those things are just considered to have gone smoothly.
Well, yeah, I see what you're saying, but if you did make a mistake, then for future sessions, you don't want people to be playing on the assumption that the rules were one way when they're actually a different way. So
true, true.
Yeah. And I think, well, and this actually came about because of the game that we started, Leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And Wayne felt that he didn't handle certain situations or he didn't anticipate certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
So he made a mistake with the rules. So then he quickly pointed that out at the end of the session,
mm-hmm.
that he made a mistake. And then he clarified how it should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fine. I mean, it's not like it affected our enjoyment of the game.
No,
but now we walked away with a better understanding of how something should be handled. You know, after you start with maybe, you know, your own input on what you thought went poorly, or holding back if you follow, like, Chris's advice and you don't want to lead them at all, what kind of questions would you start with, Chris?
Well, I mean, obviously there's the big one. What did you like and what did you dislike? So, what's the most exciting part of the session? It's a good way to go. And the reason for that is just kind of hear what the players enjoyed out of it, so then you can know what points that maybe they want to explore, either in the story or in the system, or maybe things that they specifically don't mention when you ask what was exciting, then that would be things that you can maybe minimize or ignore in going on to the next sessions.
No, that's a good question, and you'd be surprised at some of the answers. I think when we played 4E,
mm-hmm.
we enjoyed a lot of the talking stuff, so then we ended up getting more talking
mm-hmm.
and more conversations as opposed to dungeon crawls or straight-up combats.
Mm-hmm.
And then it allows you to adjust, like, where do you want to put your time? What are going to be the dramatic moments in your game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another question, and this gets into the negativity or the constructive part of it, is was there anything you'd like to change?
This one's a little tough, actually, because it's one of those things, you know, when you build a game, especially if it's not a sandbox game, if you intend it as a Twine game with a kind of a semi-set plot, you know, if there's something you ask the players, what would they like to change? That can really throw some wrenches into your game, which, I mean, can also be a fun point. You know, it's enjoyable as a game master to try and work around those kinds of issues. But at the same time, that's a... Yeah, it can be a wrench.
And one of the things they might want to change is their actual PC.
Yeah, that's a big one.
So you could leave it as anything you like to change, and they might throw elements with the story, but if they might think things about the PC,
mm-hmm.
their player character. You could even actually point blank just ask them, would you like to change anything about your player character?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, that's something that kind of as a general rule I always leave open is, especially if players are playing with a new system or a new character type that they haven't played before, they may not be happy with it. So I always give them a few sessions at least to be able to modify their PCs. You know, the game's about having fun, so you should play something that you enjoy playing.
Would you let them completely replace their PC, like go with a completely different concept?
If we're in the first few sessions, yeah, I would.
Yeah, me too. I'm thinking of an example of the Rifts game I'm playing,
mm-hmm.
where somebody had a character who had, not entirely sure, because I didn't come in at the beginning of the adventure,
mm-hmm.
but had some sort of elaborate backstory that was not inflexible, but it didn't work with the current party dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And the player didn't feel that they could do what they really wanted with this character with the adventure or with the current party.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than be disruptive and or anything like that, they just talked to the game master and came up with an entirely different concept. Like, very, very different. People familiar with Rifts, something along the lines of a shaman, and then switched over to somebody in robot power armor.
That's such a slight difference, yeah.
Yeah, so completely changed that. And then not only changed their class,
mm-hmm.
but also just changed the concept in that they could work within that campaign,
mm-hmm.
and with the player character, the other PCs. So that yeah, it's a lot better than somebody being unhappy or being disruptive.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember in second edition game Dungeons and Dragons, I think I played a paladin kit.
Uh huh.
And I don't know. I think I was undead, if I remember correctly.
Undead paladin.
I was an undead paladin who maybe hunted other undead. Maybe. I don't know if that was a kit. There's a kit in there, and I was playing. I don't know if I modified it. But I thought it would be fun to play, and boy, was I wrong. I don't know why I thought playing silent silent killer was going to be a fun guy to play. But...
It's great in movies, you know. He looks awesome, but...
Yeah, because you got all those guys around you to make crack jokes and move the story along while you just sit there. It's like, yeah, playing Mad Max, probably not that fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, your wife's killed and raped. Mm. Your baby was run down. And... All right, have fun.
Enjoy. Yeah, you know, it could take a bit of a retconning and some in-game gymnastics for the PCs to suddenly have this new person among them, so completely new group dynamic. But again, it's worth it for everybody to have fun with the game. So
yeah, another good question to ask is, what do you plan to do next? Like, what do your characters plan to do next?
Yeah, that's always just a great question because I mean, it's how more clearly can you say, hey, tell me what you want me to do in the next session? You know,
this might be one that you could have them get back to you and have them think about it, because you don't really need the immediacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fine if they think about what they want to do, but perhaps set them a deadline so that you give yourself a few days in which to incorporate those plans.
It still won't work. No, like, for all of these different kinds of questions, I prefer a more organic way of doing it, in that I like to ask my players to keep in player journal, or to do like a short write-up or review of the previous session, and not just on the first session, but throughout the game. But that's something that you can't really do immediately after the game. It's something that's better done later on, and through email or messages or something like that. But it just doesn't work. Players don't do it regularly. They don't do it in time. I've tried offering bribes and things like that, deadlines, but yeah, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, a journal and just asking what they plan to do next is a little bit different. A journal,
yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Some people might try to write it in character, and they're trying to get the right voice.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you just have them send you something, like a sentence, yeah, I'm thinking about doing this, then. But I mean, if you are worried, then do make it at the table and have people give you, what's one thing that you plan to do next? Just, you know, just a sentence. So they're not worried, not trying to think of some very elaborate plan or to sound very clever, or in the case of a journal, to write something that you would find in a fantasy novel, at least in their own minds, thinking, yeah.
Mm. And, you know, actually, kind of even though we were just making fun of it, one of the reasons that it might be good to ask the players kind of online or not in a group conversation is because the players might have different plans, and they might have some that they want to do, maybe take their character in their own direction, kind of working with their background or something like that. Of course, not separating from the group. I'm not encouraging that. But yeah, that way at least it's not so much a consensus on what the players are going to do, but what each individual player is interested in doing.
Oh, absolutely. And you can even split it where, and we've talked about that when we talked about preparing for the first session, in that people can think of reasons why the group is together.
Mm-hmm.
And then that helps create that cohesion and helps get the story flowing right away.
Mm-hmm.
You can also have them, as a group, to quickly discuss, what do you think you guys are going to do next? We want to investigate this person. They seem very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Now, get back to me. If you have any individual plans, then you can send them to me via Facebook or whatever.
Exactly.
So at least you got something. At least you got the group plan before they go out the door, and that's something to work with. And then if people have, and not everybody, especially after first session, not everybody's going to have a clear idea how they want their player to work, or what their motivations are, or what secondary things they want to do. So yeah, it's fine. At least everybody's kind of aware of what the group plan is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once the players are out the door, it's time to have some conversations with yourself.
Pour a glass of whiskey.
What's a question you would ask yourself, Chris?
What do I do next? Or what happens next? I think the way we phrased it earlier is, what's the most likely result of the PC's actions? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen?
Yeah. Regardless of what their plan is going to be in the previous question, what's the result of what they've done? What would be a natural consequence of what they've done in the session that just transpired?
This is such an important thing to think about. I can't emphasize enough how much value this question has. Because one of the ways to make your games engaging and interesting, and to make PCs seem lifelike, is to keep them from being static, the world and the NPCs. You know, the people, the players are in there and they're messing things around, and the world should react in some way to it. And even if it goes down to really minor things, you know, like basic people just putting off their schedules because, you know, there's dangerous people in town or something like that. Really, it is. It's a way to make the world more alive.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely makes it more alive. And another thing to consider is the consequences or the results don't have to all happen in the next session.
Mm-hmm.
You can have ones that are going to come to fruition a few sessions later.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're playing a more railroad game or a more sandbox game, players still have to feel like their actions matter.
Yes.
And have consequences. And yeah, exactly what Chris said about, you know, that it's just going to make the game more fun and exciting and more realistic,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And feel free to take a more active hand in it, too. You know, if you want to trip the PCs up, you know what all of the NPCs are thinking about. You know what all of their plans are. So you can make them start to run contrary to what the PCs are doing, set up adversaries and conflicts, and yeah, it's fun. All your evil plans.
Yeah, we've had a couple moments or a few things where, I mean, we had an like elaborate police investigations that go on because people decided to kill somebody in a motel room.
You're still bitter about that, aren't you?
I'm bitter because I made that detective's notebook that you were supposed to find and we never got to that. I still have it. I still have it.
My heart goes out to you. It really does.
I should give it to you, yeah. Okay, here's what your character would have found in that game that we played 3 years ago.
If you do, it's like kind of said, oh, thanks, dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, the things like that happen, you know. PCs do things that just surprise you, you aren't expecting to. And, you know, the more that you go in and build up these details intercession, the easier it is for you to think about what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be something that's super important either.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense, if you think about, I'll go back to Arrow, and I read a review of it, and they said one thing that Arrow does really well is, and I think the phrase was, they allow the soap opera elements to do the character heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, yeah, that was really good. I mean, they've got their action, they've got their Green Arrow story, superhero mm-hmm. stuff, but then they use more traditional soap opera or drama style story elements to give the characters more depth.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen. I mean, you could offend an NPC, and then you've got the social conflict. Not mm-hmm. not a physical conflict, or not a political conflict, but a social conflict. Maybe, you know, somebody could slap a character in the face at a party, and then what do you do with that? I mean, it's a very minor thing, but that can add some interesting elements to the game.
Mm-hmm.
Create a rival, a nemesis, a romantic rival, even. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, actually, you mentioned political there as well. Political can be one of the biggest things, because you may make an enemy with slapping that NPC across the face at a party, but, you know, you're at a party. Lots of different people see that. So now that NPC's enemies might want to get themselves closer to you to try and be friends. Friends of that NPC probably would have a less favorable look towards you, and all kinds of things. You know, if that NPC is somebody powerful, then you are suddenly a new power player in this city or realm or whatever the case may be. And so people have to realign the way that they look and treat the PCs.
You know, I don't know, maybe it's the games I played. I just can't imagine a PC slapping an NPC. I imagine
shanking
it the other
gun
way.
Is more likely.
Yeah. Just, what are you going to do? I slap him. What? I slap. Okay, I'll roll? I don't know. I don't know what to do here. Usually it's, I stab him. No, come on. You're at a party. No, I stab him. No, I take out my gun. What?
It's a fantasy game.
Yeah, fantasy game. I summon an ape, and the ape slaps him. What? I don't understand the slapping. He just seems to slap everybody.
Bigby's hand of social slapping.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah. I slap the dragon. Okay, I'm not even going to roll his response.
What are you doing?
Another question you should ask yourself is...
Speaking of unexpected actions.
Uh-huh, yeah. Is what kind of actions caught you off guard the most?
Why did he slap that dragon?
Oh, yeah. But this gets into, and it's related to the questions about what excited you the most or what would you like to change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's certain things that you're going to notice that the players maybe really responded well to. Mm-hmm. And they might not even, they might not say it when you ask for the feedback.
Because mm-hmm.
they might not have noticed it themselves. Where you're like, wow, that part of the game went a long time.
Yes.
And maybe they were having fun. Or... this part of the game where I spent most of my preparation didn't go that long,
mm-hmm.
or they didn't even get to it.
Yeah, and one of the things that might catch you off guard is where the players are going mentally in the game. Kind of who are they thinking is the villain at this point, or what groups do they consider rivals or friends that might not be what you've considered. For example, if you're doing a mystery style game, so you've dropped a few clues to the PCs that you thought were going to point towards NPC A, but they're looking at the same clues but completely convinced that it's NPC B. You know, what do you do? How do you handle that? Do you put in more clues to lead the other way, or do you just scrap A and go with B? Things like that.
They're just slapping NPC B. Slapping them. Yeah. No, and yeah, that's a really good dilemma. Yeah, do you stay with what you planned, or do you switch it so it fits more with the way the PCs are thinking?
Yeah, and never forget that the PCs can gain a lot of satisfaction out of having solved a mystery, too. So even if it wasn't the mystery you originally planned, sometimes going with it works.
Right, you solved a mystery.
Exactly. Hey, the ideas that they're coming up with are even better than the ones you thought up.
Yeah. Other things could be where you thought you understood a rule,
mm-hmm.
but when she actually started to play it, you're like, well, I don't actually understand it as much as I thought. So that would be something is, you know, go back and reread that part of the rule book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For that matter, you might find that some of the rules you don't enjoy as much as you thought you were going to. For example, if some of the combat rules turn out to be tedious or less fun than you expected them to, that's a way to rethink maybe how you're planning to structure the game going forward. Maybe less of that style of encounter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it was. You thought this was going to be a big winner,
mm-hmm.
and then everybody was doing it, and you're like, nah. Yeah.
Solos in 4E. That's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah.
They look really awesome, big climactic meeting with the dragon, but it just turns into a battle of attrition 2 hours later.
Yeah, and going back to like certain things running longer or certain things running shorter, it gives you an idea of how much you'll need for mm-hmm. future sessions, like how many scenes that you'll need for those sessions.
Yes, timing.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's pretty busy, and probably the worst thing about being a game master is the amount of time that you have to spend in preparing for the sessions.
Oh, God, yes.
So looking at how long things went and what you used and what you didn't use is going to give you a clearer idea of the amount of time that you need to spend preparing for the sessions. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably find, and at least in our experience, that you've probably spent about twice the amount of time preparing that you needed to.
Every single time.
So live and learn.
Yep. or like me, just live it, don't learn. And the last one is just one of the big round questions is, did we actually play the game that I pitched to the players? So, of course, you know, when you propose a game to your players, so you say, this is what I plan to play. This is the tone, the style, all of those different parts. And when this first session is ended, does it actually feel like that's the game that you played?
Yeah, and if the answer is no, that you didn't play the game that you pitched, then you have to make the decision whether or not to, if not re-pitch the game to the players, but to make or push the players towards that game,
mm-hmm.
or to go with the game that you're actually playing.
Yeah.
To give an example, if you wanted or pitched a very dark supernatural game, like Call of Cthulhu, something out of H.P. Lovecraft, but the game turns out to be more supernatural, which is a little more lighthearted.
When they met Cthulhu, they started screaming, "Get some!"
Yeah, that kind of thing. It's like, well, do I want to play Supernatural or do I want to play H.P. Lovecraft?
Mm-hmm. This one is, I'd almost recommend that this one you can discuss with the players, because if they feel like it is or is not in line with the game that you pitched, it doesn't really matter as long as they had fun. Or vice versa, even if it is the game that you pitched and they don't seem all that warm on it, then maybe that's something to reconsider.
And there's also how you feel. I mean, if you're thinking, yeah, okay, the players are having fun, but do you want to run a game that you didn't intend to run?
True, true.
So you also have to think, are you having fun? Would you be fine playing Supernatural
mm-hmm.
for, you know, the months that the campaign is set to go?
Yeah.
I don't know. Chris, have you ever, like, abandoned a game? Like, if the players are going in another direction that you just like, bah, forget it.
No. No, I don't think I have. I don't think I have. Have you?
Me? No. I think the last game that I ran, 13th Age, was not really the game that I pitched, in that it was supposed to explore different things, but I think it was supposed to be a bit darker than it ended up being.
Yeah, like, I remember when we were talking about it, the review about, the city of only children that we were to take care of, and,
It wasn't a city of only children. It was a city with children. that they were going to give to you.
Oh, okay.
To help them escape.
Yeah. See, that's question number five here. Did your players actually listen to your pitch?
Yeah.
No, but like I agree. I think from what you described afterwards, the game seemed to have taken a different direction than what you'd intended to it. But you know, actually, I didn't really feel that it was off of what you pitched. Then again, the pitch was mostly Let's Play 13th Age and a military campaign.
Those are the only words that you heard in the pitch.
Exactly right.
So, but it was fine. Like I was enjoying the game and enjoying running the game. And then sometimes you're like, well, maybe I just pitched the wrong game, or what I pitched and then what I set up. In my case, what I pitched versus what we could accomplish were a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So I just went with what we could accomplish.
Yeah, and I don't feel that the pitch is always that solid of a thing because, you know, what's the saying? No plan ever survives contact with the enemy or with the PCs. It's just games go off the rails all the time. That's part of what's fun about them is, you know, it's not your story. It's a shared story. So it doesn't really bother me if it goes off track. If people don't seem to be having fun, of course, that's a much bigger issue. But as far as if it's meandering from the original intent, that doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, I mean, I think of a couple of examples where if I were the game master, I would have been tempted to pull the plug.
Mm-hmm.
One of them would have been when we played Hollow Earth Expedition.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the pitch was to play very pulpy characters and to act that way, and everybody embraced that.
Yeah.
And if I was running Hollow Earth Expedition, and I wasn't, Wayne was running that, and people didn't do real pulp style, I don't think that would have been very fun. I think it would have been a pretty ordinary game, and as a game master, I wouldn't have had fun. And then a game that you ran, it was the Fate World War II game.
Yeah, that one went really off the rails.
In tone, but we had fun. I don't know how much fun you had, but the players had fun. And what happened there was it was like World War II, but the undead, which wasn't actually part of the pitch, I don't believe. That was a surprise.
It was Weird War II, so it was Supernatural World War II, so.
Yeah, and we ended up playing a very campy style game.
Yes.
We had a lot of fun with the aspects of Fate, and you can make your aspects like catchphrases.
Mm-hmm.
So if you imagine like at a Predator, you know, I don't have time to bleed, and you just write, yeah, that's what it's going to be. So we all just, even though we didn't have to have all these catchphrases out of our aspects, everybody wrote only those.
Mm-hmm.
And then it helped to make the game really, really campy. Even when the game got really dark, it still was kind of campy dark, like more Evil Dead than, or more Army of Darkness even than Evil Dead, and certainly not Dawn of the Dead.
No, not by any means.
But if I were a player, the game master, who has set up a long campaign that was designed to be quite dark, I don't know if I would want to play Army of Darkness.
Yeah, that's a tough call, because I originally intended the game to have a darker pitch to it than it actually turned out to have, and that was partially because we chose catchphrases for it. The game just started with a more open, comical nature, but the ideas I'd had for the sessions were a bit darker in tone. But I think we had enough fun with the first couple of sessions. It was the third and final session that kind of the tone and the more action hero catchphrase style that the players had, where they started to get a little bit dissonant. So, but by then it was also the last session, so it wasn't really worth considering about whether or not to continue.
Oh, okay. It's hard to project yourself because this was a few years ago, but would you have continued on?
I doubt it, no.
Okay.
I don't think I would have continued at that point, but that's just because you're right, the tone didn't really match the game. But if you guys had all wanted to continue playing, then I probably would have done so, but maybe just lightened it up a bit. Or we could have worked on our characters to match the aspects with a darker tone, if that's what the players had wanted.
Well, you say what the players want.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have wanted that?
For me, when I play, I enjoy telling a good story, and part of that is the audience having fun. So I'm actually not all that concerned with what the actual game is, and I'm pretty happy to run anything as long as I'm with people who are enjoying it, you know?
Okay.
It's, you know, it's like we said, you know, I know it sounds kind of chintzy, but we're all a bunch of friends, so it's just as much hanging out with you guys as it is the actual game itself. You know?
Aww.
Digital hug.
Yeah, sure. I certainly can't argue with that.
Yeah, but I can totally understand what you're saying, that, you know, you're in it to tell us a story. You want to make something specific. And I can totally understand.
No, I think my major point is that you certainly run with it, but I don't feel the game masters are obligated to run a story that they don't want to run.
I agree. And enjoyment is important.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if a game master is having fun running a supernatural game, even though they intended a Lovecraftian game, then yeah, that's fine. They should stick with it. But if not, then I don't think they should feel that they're now locked into several months worth of joylessly running this game for people, you know.
It's like being in a loveless relationship.
Yeah. But I mean, being a game master can feel like a burden at the best of times.
True.
And people can feel unappreciated, certainly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just wouldn't want somebody to not have fun. Like, sour themselves on the role-playing experience or a particular game system because the campaign went in a different direction.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, to be long advice short, be honest with yourself and whether or not you are going to be happy running the game as it's turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And people are going to understand. It's just like, you know, we'll just wrap it up here because I suck.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, you're asking your players to give you honest feedback on how they feel the game is going, if they want to change anything about the setting or their characters or something like that. So you owe it to them to be honest back, you know. Nobody wants their game master to be uninvolved in the actual game.
No, that's a really good point. Yeah, being honest with your players. And it's just like, yeah, I'm having a problem. What's that? You.
John, you suck. Get out.
Yeah. The Monty Python quotes, gotta stop.
Yes.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode on post-session. I think it's just about wrapping up my voice.
Yeah, you're getting worse as it goes on.
We're actually cutting out all the coughs in this episode.
So it's going to be like a 10-minute episode in the end.
Yeah, so the important thing to remember is that after the first session is to spend a little time to find out how to make the game better and how to make the game more enjoyable for everybody involved and how to make planning subsequent sessions easier.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Out of Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idlereredhands.com, outofredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can plus one us on G+, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or you can join up and talk to us in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums and are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.